You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts money where its fantasies are. On the Fantasy Sports Network, we've got a great show lined up for you this afternoon. We've got a ton of information to get to, like literally and figuratively, Matt. I might have 50 to 75 different players, topics, picks, and everything else in between that we're hitting on today's show, or at least we're going to attempt to, so I'm going to have to talk really fast today. Mark Lawrence will join us, playbook.com. The Tony Cincotta will join us. Steve Psycho Lyons will join us. We're talking Heisman Trophy odds that have been posted, as it is that time of the year, the college football season, right around the corner. Well, maybe not right around the corner. It's around the corner, but it's rapidly approaching. And the college season, you know what? It sneaks up on you, man. It's not the National Football League. NFL previews, whatever, man. You take a look at the draft picks. There's a couple of free agent signings. A couple of players signed with another team. College football, there's a lot of work that needs to be done to break down the 124, 125 line football teams right now. But the books have started to post the numbers. We've got the futures out there. We've got some college conference odd futures out there. We've got some regular season win totals out there right now. And we have some Heisman Trophy odds that have been posted. So let's kick the tires on the Heisman Trophy a little bit with Mark Lawrence today. Steve Lyons will talk Major League Baseball, talk about the Boston Red Sox. John Farrell on the hot seat. The Tony Cincotta will join us, talk some Major League Baseball DFS. So like I said, we've got a lot of stuff to get to on the program today. So let's get started with some National Football League talk. On yesterday's program, we talked about how the National Football League finally got something right and decided to let players celebrate excessively without being flagged. Now, there's no gun signals. You know, you can't point a gun. You can't slash your throat. There's some common sense that comes into play here. But Roger Goodell, the National Football League, deserves credit for this. We often criticize him for the long list of stupid-ass things that they do, and I'm sure they'll continue to do stupid-ass things, but they deserve credit for this. Although, evidently Roger Goodell didn't consult with Cincinnati Bengal head coach Marvin Lewis before he made this decision, as Marvin Lewis, he's not down with this. You know, because Marvin Lewis is a beacon of integrity. Marvin Lewis, you know, it's like the lady in The Simpsons. My God, would somebody think of the children? You know, Marvin Lewis just worried about the kids. He wants to set a good example. Marvin Lewis says, yeah, this isn't good. What kind of example is this going to set for young football players? I don't know. Probably the same example as you drafting a kid that just punched a chick in the face. Probably the same example of you employing Adam Pac-Man Jones for years, despite the fact that he shot and paralyzed somebody outside of a strip club in Las Vegas. Adam Pac-Man Jones, let's be real. This guy's been arrested more times than Chris Brown, all right? You know, Devontae's perfect. Yeah, he's a great guy. He's perfect. He's a great guy. Dirtiest guy in the National Football League. Are you freaking kidding me, Lewis? Are you kidding me? You are worried about the example? How about little Timmy in Cincinnati that smacks his sister in the face? And his mother says, you can't do that, Timmy. Why not, Mom? The Cincinnati Bengal players do it. You want to talk about example? What about little Billy to shoot somebody outside of a strip club? Hey, yeah, that's what NFL players do. No, son, that's not what NFL players do. That's what Cincinnati Bengal players do. Let's be real. You know, the fact that Andy Dalton hasn't been robbed in a parking lot of their stadium yet is a miracle. I'm not talking about, like, robbed randomly. Robbed by somebody on the Bengals. Like, I'm serious. I'm amazed that, like, you know, a Cincinnati Bengal player hasn't, like, carjacked Dalton. Oh, damn, I didn't realize it was you, Andy. Sorry, man. And you know what? Andy Dalton would deserve it because he's robbed me for tens of thousands of dollars, you son of a bitch. But nevertheless. So, like, really? Marvin Lewis? Who else played for the Cincinnati Bengals? Oh, yeah, a freaking dude that changed his name. Ocho Cinco! The most popular player in Cincinnati Bengal history is Icky Woods. Because of what? Because he was a great running back? Why? Because of his great perm? Because of the Jerry curls? Like what? Why was he so popular? The Icky Shuffle! Now, I gotta understand, though, why Marvin Lewis doesn't want anybody celebrating. Because the fact of the matter is, his team sucks so hard, he has no reason to celebrate. So he's like, why should you celebrate? Why should anybody else be allowed to celebrate? You know what, Marvin? Maybe you should worry about trying to win a freaking playoff game instead of worrying about players celebrating touchdowns. Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. Got a ton of stuff to get to on the program today. A lot of information. We got a little bit of something for everybody. You like college football? We're talking Heisman Trophy odds. You like Major League Baseball? We're talking Major League Baseball from a betting and from a DFS perspective with Tony Cincotta. We've got a former big league player and a pretty crazy one, Steve Psycho Lyons, joins us. One of the more energetic Major League Baseball analysts out there. Now doing Red Sox stuff on Nesson in studio alongside Hall of Famer Jim Rice. So there's a ton of stuff to get to. Let's bring in Mark Lawrence right now. And we appreciate Mark joining us because Mark's cramming for exams right now. The playbook has to get to the newsstands. It's like the old school commercial, remember? The package absolutely positively has to get to Pittsburgh overnight. And that's what you're dealing with right now.
That was Federal Express. And I think you know the story of the owner of Federal Express. I don't know if you've heard it before or not, Gabe, but he got into business because he needed to get some money, round up some money. He couldn't do it, so he hopped a plane to Vegas and bet the entire company when he went to Vegas, bankrolled the company that way, won the money, and Federal Express is now positively in business as the number one package delivery company in America.
That's hardcore.
Yes, it is.
That's hardcore right there. I read a funny story about Donald Trump when he was running the Taj Mahal in Vegas, too. It opened up. He spent all this money. He was having a hard time. He overestimated. What a shock. So he overestimated how much action would come in. So he started to try to get some Chinese high rollers and some big-time gamblers to come. So he did. And Trump gets beat for like $4, $5, $7 million type thing in like a 12-hour span. And, you know, we're talking, this is 20 years ago. So at the time, it was a big deal. Trump's not happy. He's panicking. And they're like, man, this place is going under. We're in a lot of trouble. So somehow Trump does the old casino trick. Why don't you stay for another couple of days? We set you up. You know, he got him like a bunch of VIP stuff. And so the guy stays. The guy loses the money back. All right. And I guess all the executives and everything are like, all right, thank God. Trump got like $5 million back of it. Trump had to be stopped from trying to go again with the guy. Like Trump was like, let's go again and try to win the money. They're like, let it go, Don, let it go. And they said, we realized right then and there, Don Trump doesn't own a casino. He's a gambler. He just happens to own it, but he's still a gambler type of thing. And it's fascinating. But hey, Donald Trump and FedEx are both doing pretty well, Mark.
I think they're both doing well right now. They're both on top of the world, if you will. Yes. You know, Donald Trump, that old pigs eat and hogs get slaughtered mentality, but he got by. And what is he right now? He's over in Europe representing the United States.
All right. So Ottawa Senators forced game seven last night. 2-1 win over the Pittsburgh Penguins. Ton of resiliency and heart this Ottawa Senators hockey club has shown time and time again. Game 7 Thursday night, Pens as expected, minus 200 favorites in this spot. The Nashville Predators have already cashed their ticket, their first ever Stanley Cup final appearance, and the first time ever that a quote-unquote 16 seed makes the Stanley Cup finals.
What a world, what a great year it is for Nashville. We talked about them as being Smashville, and that's exactly the attitude that they've taken on here right now. The first number 16 seed, they didn't do 16 seeds until recently here, but they are the number 16 seed in the Stanley Cups this year. They've made it to the finals. Congratulations to them. Ottawa will look to maybe get there as well against Pittsburgh. It might be a tough road to hoe, however, against defending champion Pittsburgh Penguins. But look inside at this series here, Gabe. You see that Pittsburgh is only 3-3. Their last six playoff home games. Ottawa has not backed down from this team either. They're 11-6 in their last last 17 playoff games is Ottawa, and against Pittsburgh head-to-head, how about 6-4 the last 10 playoff road games Ottawa Senators here? So I think this game is going to be a little bit down to the wire, more so than people anticipate.
Yeah, and if you're Ottawa, you're playing with house money right now. Obviously, you're one win away from the Stanley Cup. This is something that the players have dreamed of their entire lives. Yet at the same point in time, the pressure's clearly on Sidney Crosby, Malkin, and the Pittsburgh Penguins. If I'm Ottawa and I'm Guy Boucher, their head coach, I stressed this before. Win or lose, we're proud of you. It was a hell of a freaking run. Now let's go out there and get this game and get this. Because like you said, they're not intimidated. This is a toss-up. And my gut tells me Pittsburgh find a way to get it done on home ice here, Mark. But it's one of these deals where it's the old clothespin pick. Because how the hell do I not take the Ottawa Senators at like plus 170, plus 180?
Especially given the fact of all success these road teams have had in the postseason here this year as well. If I'm the Senators, I'm the head coach, I'm watching game films of Craig Anderson when he blanked, I think it was San Jose, 1-0 in overtime. He had 51 saves in that hockey game. That's what's going to get me going in this hockey contest, because Craig Anderson can steal this game.
Yeah, it's going to be. I'm really hoping for it. It's Gary Bettman's worst nightmare, too, from a ratings perspective. So
yes.
I'm hoping for it. All right, let's talk some baseball before we get to the Heisman odds. Cardinals and Dodgers, interesting game last night. A dangerous game for Jock Peterson. Dude, like, nearly got decapitated by Yasiel Puig. Dodgers 1-13 last night. It's always devastating when teams get into the bullpen, Mark, and it's especially crushing when you lose one of these baseball games. But if you're the St. Louis Cardinals, you've got the right guy on the hill tonight after you extended your pen last night. And it's interesting because Kershaw was on the hill last night, Mark, but Mike Leake, second best DRA in the National League behind Clayton Kershaw. His whip, 0.99. He's given up two runs or fewer in 7 of his 8 starts this year.
He's what I call a top live dog on the baseball card tonight. Nothing to knock about Mike Leake. None whatsoever. And in fact, he's taken over right now for all intents and purposes as the ace of the St. Louis Cardinal baseball staff. I like their chances in this contest here tonight. He's done nothing wrong. He's been perfect on the road thus far this baseball season here. And as you mentioned here, the tough luck loss to Kershaw last night, hard to swallow for St. Louis. As you mentioned, the Dodgers are going well. The Cardinals are not. But if you like arms, you like handicapping baseball, Mike Leake, to me, is a top live underdog play in the baseball card this evening.
Water always finds its level in baseball. Peterson's going to be out after getting elbowed in the face last night. Dodgers are hot, 1-5-6. Cards are not right now. I believe they've lost 5-6 right now. But Rich Hill on the hill for the Dodgers tonight. Had blister issues. That's always got to be a concern. I think we've got a live pup tonight as well with the Redbirds. Interesting. Pirates and Braves here. And I like what you write from your database today, Mark. The Bucs, 15-7 last 22 games against this Atlanta Braves baseball team. Without their best player right now in Freddie Freeman. And very interesting, there's a new dynamic because they're playing in a new stadium. You know, they have new stadiums every 3 years, it seems, in Atlanta. new stadium right now. And I'll tell you what, Julio Teheran wishes that they didn't move into this new stadium. He's getting killed here.
Yeah, it's not serving him well at all. Teheran's really struggled at home. You can go back in his starts. I think the last 21 starts, he only cashed 5 of them at home in Atlanta. And you're talking about a baseball team that dominates the other opponent, yet they're the underdog in the contest here. Trevor Williams isn't getting a lot of respect here, but if you tick his numbers down, you break them down here. He only had one really bad outing on the hill thus far this season. That's what pumped up his ERA and his whip a little bit. You take that bad outing out, he's been a very steady pitcher here. I think the Atlanta Braves is the wrong favorite in this contest here tonight. Until Teheran can turn it around at home, I got to back the Pirates here tonight.
Yeah, he's 1-4 with a 10.24 ERA in this new stadium. Unbelievable. unbelievable. All right, let's talk some football, some college football. You're hard at work at this right now as we speak, putting the final touches on the upcoming playbook, and I can't wait to read it. The sports books are starting to drip-drop some of the college football futures. Not everybody's picked up the win totals yet, but there are the big-time Power 5 college football win conference futures posted. We, of course, have the overall championship odds posted. Now we have some Heisman Trophy winner odds posted. Let's start off with last year's winner in Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson, 7-1, Ran away with the trophy last year, 51 touchdowns, so what, 30 thrown, rushed for 21 more. He's lost his top wide receivers, and he's lost a few linemen, but both tackles are back. The Cardinals' defense is going to be improved. Seven starters back on the defensive side of the football. He's going to freaking light it up and kill it once again. But I don't have to tell you, Mark, nobody's won back-to-back Heisman trophies in 42 years, going back to the Archie Griffin days.
Yeah, back at Ohio State, Archie Griffin won back-to-back Heisman trophies. I don't think you're gonna see that happen again this football season here. And we always like long odds when it comes to handicapping Heisman Trophy winners here. Heisman Trophy winners that make it to New York almost always do because they put up big numbers. And of the quarterbacks that you had listed on your screen, a couple of quarterbacks that jumped out to me that have the potential to put up big numbers, Jarrett Stidham at Auburn. He's going into that Gus Malzahn offense here. He's going to be good for 400 yards at least every football game and probably a couple of 500-yard efforts here. If they're the surprise team in the SEC, Stidham will be the reason. He could barge his way into the contest. Josh Rosen at UCLA, we all know how good he actually is. If he stays healthy with that soft shoulder that he has, he could also barge his way into the Heisman Trophy race.
My deal with Rosen is he's a little brittle.
Yes, he is.
He's a little thin, and I wonder if UCLA as a team will be good enough. You know, as far as Stidham is concerned, I tell you what, Mark, I'm very high on Auburn coming into this year. I saw an initial win total out there of 8.5 for the Tigers. They've struggled at the quarterback position since Cam Newton has moved on. This is Stidham's the guy, of course, coming over from Baylor. Now, everybody's talking about Sam Darnold as the favorite here, and you're right. Oftentimes, guys come out of nowhere, and we've seen freshmen come out of nowhere and win this as well. So Sam Darnold's the it guy coming into this year. Hard to argue with that, but also the odds aren't great. Plus 350 right now. 31 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. NFL scouts are drooling over Darnold right now. The USC Trojans are 7-1 to win it all. The odds just aren't good enough to take the chance.
No, you don't play short odds with futures and Heisman Trophy races for one reason mainly, Gabe, because everything has to go right for that favorite to end up cashing that ticket. Injuries, the course of the season for the teams, you're much, much better off finding quarterbacks or especially players that are able to put up big points, big yards in those contests at longer odds. Hence, I think Stidham ends up being a good, valuable long shot play.
Baker Mayfield's plus 650 right now, triple threat quarterback. He can run. He can pass, and he can elude the cops. So, yeah, triple threat. And I was thinking, you know, kid just got arrested. It's on video. Doesn't really hurt people. You had Winston. You had Johnny Manziel. And it doesn't say the college football voters don't really seem to care. Mayfield's got a big opportunity. They go to the horseshoe. They play OSU. Big-time chance for a road win. I don't think they're going to get that road win, though. He loses P. Ryan. He loses Mixon, another class act. Sooners 8-1 to win it all. A lot of hype about Mayfield, but I'm not buying in either here. JT Barrett 9-1. The guy can't throw the football. He's not winning the Heisman. So let's get into the long shots here, Mark. You mentioned Stidham. Here's a couple of guys that I like, and I'm interested in your take on this football team as well, and the Oklahoma State Cowboys and Mason Rudolph. You got to argue that Mason Rudolph and James Washington are the best quarterback wide receiver combo in college football. You can also argue that nobody in the Big 12 is going to be able to stop these guys this year. He comes in here 20-1 to win the Heisman, 28 touchdowns last year, just 4 interceptions. The schedule is pretty soft. The only non-conference tough game they play is at Pitt. I got to tell you, Mark, I expect Mason Rudolph to be in New York as one of the candidates at the end of the year.
I 100% agree with you, Gabe, here. He's going to lead a team that has the only quarterback to throw for 4,000 yards, the only running back to rush for 1,000, and the only wide receiver to catch 1,000 yards. 4,000, 1,000, 1,000. The only team in college football this year, that's Oklahoma State. This team will be heard from this football season as well, Mason Rudolph.
I like that you agree with me. And how about this, a team in your backyard here? They've had pedigree with winning the Heisman. DeAndre Francois. He came on strong last year. He took a real beating, man, this kid. But he hung in there, man. You know, threw 20 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. Knowles went 7-1 in their last 8. He kept on getting better. I'm not saying he's going to win this thing, but they open up against Alabama in Atlanta. He wins this football game somehow. He catapults to the top of the list.
Unquestionably, he had a great freshman year. No quarterback threw for more yards than he did as a freshman last football season. Florida State is absolutely loaded this year with returning starters and returning starting experience. I have this team making the Final Football Four playoff slots, do I, Florida State. If they could lose to Alabama in this first game and still make the playoffs, yeah. And so too could Alabama lose and still make the playoffs. So regardless, Florida State is a very talented football team, and Francois put up huge numbers last year. I think he's more than capable of being in New York again this year as well.
Mark mentioned Josh Rosen. Great arm, great quarterback. He is a little brittle. He gets hurt. I don't think UCLA will win enough overall, and he'll be overshadowed by Darnold a little bit. And let's wrap it up with a guy that, me personally, I think he's a little bit overrated. There's a pattern of him not playing well in big football games for his football team. But the media likes him, which is important. And he's going to put up monster numbers, and that's Luke Falk out there in Pullman at 33-1 to win the Heisman.
He will put up monster numbers here. Mike Leach and whatever quarterback happens to be his quarterback will get you big numbers. I like this Washington State football team this year. I think they're going to challenge in the Pac-12 and play in the championship game. If they do make it to the championship game, it'll be because of Luke Falk, and he'll have these numbers that might be ungodly. The number one passing quarterback in all of college football. For that reason alone, you have to put him in the mix.
I'm all fired up for some college football. A little Mason Rudolph Heisman betting. Hey, Mark, I saw Oklahoma State and Auburn both in the 8.5-9 win range. If I can get that offshore, if I find that, I'm all over it. Thanks for the time. I can't wait to read the playbook. The digital version is going to be available, playbook.com, and it's going to be on newsstands sooner rather than later. Thanks for the time, Mark.
Hey, my pleasure as always, Gabe. Enjoy the games. Be good.
There's Mark Lawrence with us. We take a quick break. Steve Psycho Lyons joins us next. Game time decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabe Morenz. I'm all fired up for some college football right now after talking Heisman Trophy futures. College football season around the corner. It's nearly here. It's nearly June. Tony Sincotta is going to join us in a couple of moments. We'll talk some Major League Baseball from a DFS standpoint, but let's talk baseball right now from a Red Sox perspective. A longtime big league vet and television analyst now with Nesson. Steve Psycho Lyons joins us. Steve, it's always a pleasure, my man. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Gabe. I'm just wondering, in whose universe is college football right around the corner?
Oh, I'm fired up, man. I'm fired up. And, yeah, I've been wandering through my life for 46 years, Steve. Join the club. I'm the king of wandering. Okay, so like I said, June's rapidly approaching right now. You know, being around baseball and managers and players have always told me, at the end of May, it starts to become sort of real. Like, you are what your record says you are. We see players, they get hot in June, et cetera, as the season goes on. But at what point, Psycho, at what point does this become real? Do you buy into that 2 months in, you know, your numbers start to reflect who you are?
Well, I think for certain clubs, that's exactly the case. But I think there's a lot of teams out there this year that are underachieving based on who I think they are. I mean, I think the Red Sox are one of those teams. They're basically playing 500 baseball right now. I think they're a better team than that if they can figure out the back end of the rotation. I think the Toronto Blue Jays are a team that got off to such a horrendous start that they've been trying to dig themselves out. I think they're a better team than that. You look at like the Minnesota Twins, they're not as good as they're playing right now. So there's some teams out there, and even the Cubs, obviously they're starting to play better baseball, but that's a team that's way better than the start that they got off to. So I think that this year's a little bit different in that regard. And, the shame is there was a bunch of teams out there, if they did play better baseball, they could have gained themselves a pretty big lead in their divisions right now. But everyone's sort of been floundering.
No, you're right. And there's a lot of big-time teams that are probably somewhat underachieving right now, but at the same point in time, look, I'm a Dodgers fan. I'm not panicking. You know what I mean? They haven't hit stride yet. They haven't really gotten into a groove yet. And I look at the Dodgers and the Red Sox as similar situations. because, and Vegas is never wrong, right? So, right, Vegas had the Red Sox running away with the American League. Oh, the Red Sox are playing the Cubs in the World Series this year. Book it. It's a lock. And if it's not the Red Sox versus the Cubs, it's going to be the Red Sox versus the Dodgers. So we're still early here, man. It's 23-21. Yet John Farrell, is he on the hot seat? And I don't like to buy into media stuff, and I don't care about what talk radio says. But I do respect one of your former colleagues in Ken Rosenthal. Ken doesn't write articles for clickbait. And Ken Rosenthal says, no, this is real. If things don't get better in Boston, Farrell could be on the way out. Are you buying into this?
Well, that's a pretty general statement that you could say that about anybody. Although the last few things that Rosenthal has written about the Red Sox have turned out to be completely wrong. I think he's in the hot seat. I mean, they go into Oakland and they lose 3 out of 4. They had to win on Sunday just to salvage one win from one of the worst teams in baseball. As you said, this team has underachieved up to this point, playing about .500 baseball. So, they need to step it up a notch. I don't think all the things can be blamed on Farrell, but I think Farrell's been on the hot seat a few times over the last couple of seasons.
Yeah.
And then the team does something to play a lot better baseball right at one of those points, and those rumors kind of quiet down.
And I wonder as well, is it the manager's fault? And I saw you and Jim Rice talking about this. Is it the manager's fault that he can't get anything from the fourth and the fifth spot in the rotation? He doesn't construct the roster, right? He throws the guys out there that he has.
Right. I mean, his hands have been tied quite a bit. I mean, they don't have a fourth or fifth starter out there. And, the one guy that does go out there throws 4 innings and throws 100 pitches and then cries when they take him out of the game. So, he's in a tough situation. I've never been one of those guys that thinks that the manager makes a whole heck of a lot of difference anyway. So, firing the manager is an old age ploy in baseball to kind of shake things up. And in the meantime, a guy loses his job. I mean, there's a few managers out there that really put their stamp on the ball club. And then there's 30 teams. There's 23 managers that just, they could might as well be anybody.
Yeah.
You and I could, if they give us good players. To me, the biggest thing is kind of motivation. Hey, show up with a positive attitude every day.
Are there some managers, Steve? Players. Have you played for managers? Like, literally, they don't do anything? Like, they just sort of, they really don't do nothing. Like, you could say, yeah, man, that guy didn't do anything all year.
Yeah, there are guys like that. I mean, you have to remember, too, that they have a coaching staff that's supposed to be the guys that do most of the work. The manager is a figurehead, very much the same as it is in professional football. I mean, that guy, he's walking around clapping his hands. He's not in the trenches teaching guys, how to block properly, that kind of stuff. So, I think a good manager will take on some of that responsibility, but at the same time, you have to have a good staff around you. And if you have a good staff around you, to me, like I said, you and I could manage a team. We'd do okay if you give us good players.
All right. So, you mentioned Pomeranz, and I thought he was going to do well. Obviously, the change of stadium it's obviously been an effect. Now, you've been in a lot of markets as a player, in the media, et cetera. So you've been around a lot. As far as Boston is concerned, is there a lot of manufactured media drama? In the sense, from the Pedroia stuff, and there's problems in the clubhouse. Some guys aren't standing up. Rosenthal wrote, and you stated, Rosenthal's not in this room, but he's saying that, Red Sox players are pissed that Farrell doesn't stand up for them enough in public at times. Boston is a media hotbed, Steve. Do you see stories that are really nothing get blown up by the media and then it gets picked up nationally coming out of Boston?
Yeah, I think that happens. I sorry to sound like my old man, but I mean, it happens way less than when I played here. To me, the media in Boston is a fraction of what it used to be. And they're, I watch them be afraid of Farrell. They will never follow up a tough question to John Farrell. They'll ask him one tough question. He answers it the way he wants to, which is generally curt and short. And then they back They'll never follow up. They never question any of his decisions. So the media around here isn't that tough anymore. They don't ask that the tough questions and follow up on them like they used to. But stories in this hotbed of baseball, you know, when you look at New York and Boston, people pay attention. And, you know, there's good teams in both of those cities, and people are interested in it. So, yeah, things do get blown out of proportion. And as far as John Farrell, you know, not sticking up for his players, I would tell you that it's the exact opposite. I would actually like to see him say what's really on his mind every once in a while. He protects his players to the nth degree. You never know whether he's upset with one of his players or not, because he'll never say a bad word about anyone on his team ever. And that part is almost getting to me a little bit. It's like, man, you know, you watch these guys day in and day out, and sometimes they really stink it up out there. It would be nice to have him come out and say, that's what happened.
Are we so soft now, Steve, as well? Is this where it's become that every little thing becomes like a big deal? Ooh, the manager didn't do this, didn't say that. Everybody's always looking for something right now, in which if a man, you know, like you said, I never see a manager call anybody out anymore. Nobody says anything anymore, right? Remember Tommy Lasorda, like, you know, Earl Weaver, Sparky Anderson, they'd call you out. Guys would, you know, they'd rip you into media even. Our team sucks. Our team was terrible tonight. You don't get that stuff anymore, huh?
Yeah, you don't see that very often. And it doesn't serve a great purpose to do that very often. But every once in a while, it's warranted. And, you know, their job is to make sure that inside the clubhouse walls, that guys are protected and they can get the best out of their players. Obviously, I think the manager knows that if he comes out and badmouths one of his players, he's probably not going to get his best effort over the next few days until he licks his wounds, you know. So occasionally I think you have to do it, but in a general sense, it's not going to help your cause, I guess, if you're ripping your team all the time.
You know, Frank Robinson, when I was around the Expos, he was talking about Vladimir Guerrero, and Guerrero would swing at everything, right? You could one-hop it and whatever. And Guerrero didn't know who Frank Robinson was or cared. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't think he even knew he played or whatever. So I guess Frank sort of tried, and they had the interpreters, Manny Acta. And he tried to tell him, listen, you're a great player, but if you wouldn't swing at everything, you'd be even better. And so I said, so why do you stay on him with this? He goes, I got a call from his agent telling me to leave him alone.
Exactly.
That's the way it works now, right? Like, Frank's a Hall of Famer. You know, the agent calls, why are you bothering him in the batting cage, man? What are you doing to him?
Yeah, I think the key question is, why do you answer the phone when the agent calls? That would be my thing. I mean, I get it that nobody knows who the heck I am, but someone should know who Frank Robinson is.
I know. So, listen, I want to ask you before you get out of here. Last night, Jock Peterson got crushed by Yasiel Puig. Yasiel Puig running hard, goes up, elbows him in the face. He falls down, sort of, you know, head crashes into the wall a little bit. And you and I have talked about this. You know, you were a hell of a defensive, you know, player out there. But we're talking, you got like football players out there like now running around. Some of their size. Were you ever in a really bad collision or a funny collision or anything? And I wanted to ask you, do players actually get back to the dugout? And is it like Little League where it's like, you stupid freaking idiot, what the hell's wrong with you? Like, have you ever seen, because it always looks so pro on the field, but in the dugout, the guys lose it and go, you're a real idiot, man.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a few things. I mean, I didn't see the video of Puig and Peterson. I'd be interested in knowing who called for the ball because, you know, Puig is completely out of control most of the time.
Yeah.
And your Peterson, he's, you know, those are two big boys, but you don't really want to be running into Puig. He's a tank. Last night, Mookie Betts and Devin Marrero were celebrating after they both scored on a base hit, and they jumped up to give each other a high five, and Mookie Betts smashed Marrero right in the nose with an elbow, so much so that he was bleeding. That's a crazy collision. I remember my rookie year, I was playing center field, and, you know, I was always thought center fielder, if he wants it, he gets it. And I called a ball in left center field, and Rice and I kind of tangled up and ran into each other. I ended up catching the ball, but it was an awkward little collision. And then I talked to Dwight Evans afterwards, and he kind of looked at me and said, well, you know, you kind of got to earn your respect out there. I'm like, well, how long do I have to earn my respect? Am I, are we going to have to drop balls and collide with each other five times before I'm supposed to catch it in center field or what?
So,
and, you know, it never happened again, but I didn't really understand that whole conversation.
That's all. Hey, you're a major league center fielder. How much, you know, you're there already, Steve, right? Like, well, that's great. So
well,
he told you, hey, kid.
Here.
So he's telling you, in other words, hey, kid, get the F out of my way next time, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was my rookie year, and I'm standing between Evans and Rice, so I guess you do take some time to earn respect.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Jim Rice is one of my favorites growing up. What's it like working with him right now? He's still a big dude, man. He's still intimidating looking.
Oh, yeah, and usually everything he says is pretty intimidating, too. So, you know, you got to watch your P's and Q's with him and make sure you go in the right direction.
Exactly. Hey, Steve, always a pleasure, my man. Thanks a lot for taking the time to be here. It's always love talking ball with you.
All right, no problem, man. We'll see you again.
There's Psycho Steve Lyons. What is great stuff with Steve Lyons. Hey, kid, you got to earn your stripes around here. All right, Tony Cicada joins us next. He loves the Red Sox. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Great stuff with Steve Psycho Lyons. Too bad he was on a cell phone, but he's got great baseball stories, this guy, man. Great stuff. Talking about, imagine being a rookie playing in the middle of Jim Rice and Dwight Evans. I would say imagine that to Cameron 2 Drew, but I don't think Cameron 2 Drew knows the name Jim, Rice, Dwight, or Evans. So let's bring in the Tony Cincata. He knows who Jim Rice is. What's up, Tony?
I went to a baseball camp ran by Jim Rice and Butch Hobson when I was a kid, and Butch told me I had a good stick.
Was Family TV.
I met with the bat, my man.
I had a Sandusky. I had a Sandusky thing. Jim Rice, yeah, man, must have been scary as a kid, man. Jim Rice, what was he like? Was he was like, no, man, it's like this. Was he a serious coach, Jim Rice?
Oh, no, he was very quiet, walked around, and every once in a while said something. He was very, very low-key. You know, it was funny, the guy, I used to coach baseball, 5:30 in the morning, we used to hold a camp at Tufts University. Mike Pagliarulo would be there working with high school and college kids for his own game at 5:30 on Sunday mornings. How many players are still up at 5:30 in the morning? And this guy's out there taking ground balls.
Yeah, if they're up, they're doing other balls, eight balls.
Yeah.
They're not taking ground balls. They're snorting balls. That's a good point. No, you're right. It's totally different nowadays, isn't it? You're right. In Montreal, growing up as a kid, I remember going to baseball camp as well. And it was during the season and stuff, man. It was like on off days or like the morning of a day of a game. They'd show up earlier in the morning. Gary Carter, Andre Dawson, Ellis Valentine. Think about that. Gary Carter's a Hall of Famer. May he rest in peace. But he was showing me. I was a catcher. He's like, put your hand behind your back so you don't get the foul tips, kid. He was showing me all these little tips. Guys don't do that anymore. Now they sign an autograph. And, oh, isn't he a great guy?
No, we can't even get them to go to OTAs anymore, right? They want to be team leaders, but they can't go to OTAs. Let everybody else work out.
Yeah, how about team leaders? We'll talk baseball, but I did a thing off the top. The NFL is going to allow excessive celebrations now, Tony. Marvin Lewis is unhappy. A guy that had Ocho Cinco, a guy that has employed Pac-Man Jones, and has drafted Joe Mixon. He's not happy because it's a bad example to the kids.
Yeah, and Perfect you could throw in there as well.
Yeah, I know. All right, you know what I'm not happy about? NBA DFS season is over.
Yes.
It's so stupid, isn't it? If it's legal, it's legal, man. Like, you play on one game, Tony. What's the difference?
They got limited rules now. We're all, you know, trying to cater the government, keep things real, and see how it goes. You know, like, we only have 9 states that have marijuana legal in the United States, so we're working things one at a time. We're not as progressive as you Canadians.
See, what's the deal in Boston? No, it's not legal in Canada yet. It's not legal anywhere. Canada's actually progressive, but it's a little slow. Canada's going to be legal nationwide starting next summer, actually. So at least, you know, we stipped the state or province thing. They were like, no, it's just, boom. It's everywhere. But what about Boston right now? It passed in Mass, right?
Yeah, Boston, which is a heavy liberal city in Massachusetts, of course, always there. I mean, when you get born, you're a Democrat every once in a while, right? We throw a Mitt Romney in a Republican, so we show people that, we're for real.
Oh, it's great with the green monster. There's got to be a strain of weed, the green monster.
Yeah, I never even thought about it.
I'd open up a dispensary right across from Fenway, man. I'd have them all, the Jim Rice, like, home runs, you know what I mean? I'd just rip off all the names. They did it in Seattle when Lynch was playing. They had the Beast Mode 2.0. That's what the weed was called.
Aerosmith used to own a bar behind the Green Monster when I was growing up in Fenway Park.
Yeah. Who did?
Aerosmith.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. I don't know. I'm sure there's a lot of them. But I always found that to be cool. And Yankee Stadium has that, too. Sort of like under the bridge. And, there's sort of these fan stadium bars. They're like new stands, but bars, They got the TVs, and it's like just decked out Yankee gear. Red Sox has that, too. I went to a game years ago at Fenway. I don't know the name of the place, but sort of outside Fenway, sort of street bar type thing, stumbled in there. It was Red Sox memorabilia everywhere.
Did they escort you out? They had to make sure you get out,
No, it's Boston. It's hard. It's like Vegas. I'm never the most wasted one. You know what I mean? It's hard to be the most wasted guy at Fenway, right?
That's true. Absolutely true.
All right, speaking of Fenway, Chris Sale on the Hill tonight. Very expensive from a DFS perspective. But he's a KO machine taking on a team that strikes out a hell of a lot. The thing is, Tony, for 13-8, we better get the win out of this.
We better get the win, but I think you can get some cheap bats, like in that situation with Jared Kozat, Robert Gizelman going at it at Citi Field. You can go to that game and find a lot of cheap bats in that contest that you can go ahead and you'll be able to get a guy like Sale. Julio Teheran's been letting up home runs. The Pittsburgh Pirates' salaries are all low. I think you can go and attack Julio Teheran tonight with some left-handed bats in the Pittsburgh Pirates batting order. And, of course, if the wind blows out in Chicago again tonight, we'll load up on some of them Cubbies against Matt Moore, who's been a fly ball machine.
You mentioned Teheran. Teheran's really struggling in this new stadium, man. 1-4 at home. He's got an ERA of over 10. He's rock solid on the road, but he can't adjust to this new stadium. You mentioned Moore tonight, so you like Kyle Hendricks. Kyle Hendricks struggled a little bit out of the gate. He's starting to put it together since right now. Last five starts, 1.8 earned run average, and you mentioned it. I like the Cubbies tonight. I'm willing to lay a run and a half. I'm going to bet it. We look at Matt Moore. His whip is 1.52. He struggles on the road. He's 0-3 with an 8.63 earned run average on the road. How about this? Batters are hitting 3.43 versus him.
That's amazing. It's amazing. I liked Matt Moore. I'm not going to lie. I like Matt Moore coming into the season, and it's amazing how bad he's pitched in the greatest pitcher's ballpark, arguably in Major League Baseball.
A guy that's been pitching his ass off. I don't know if he's going to get the win tonight, but he very well could, is Mike Leake. Mike Leake comes in here. His whip is 0.99. He's given up two runs or less in seven of his eight starts. I think he's going to contain the Dodgers tonight.
You get a great pitcher's ballpark playing in Dodger Stadium. That Dodgers batting order has been up and down this season. I don't know how Mike Leake does it, but he just continually does it each and every time. Keeps the ball on the ground. That ERA 2.02 of this Dodgers team, not a great hitting team, a good hitting team in that ballpark. I think he's competitive. Like you said, it'll be tough to see what we get out of Rich Hill. Rich Hill, they could be going to bullpen early. You never know what's going to happen with this guy.
Mike Cardano was with us yesterday. We discussed, he liked the over in the Philadelphia-Colorado game. It got there, it was 8.5, seemed a little bit low. I've been riding the Rockies right now, and they're short favorites again this evening. And, you look at tonight, man, seems to be a lot of options tonight on the board, but you couldn't argue against stacking Colorado Rocky players tonight, would you, Tony?
No, I did the lineup lock show last night, and I remember saying, hey, I don't have enough Rockies in my lineup. I'm looking at this, and I loaded up with the Arizona bats yesterday, and I said, man, Blackman, Gonzalez, they put up all these runs without Gonzalez playing well the first 2 months of the season. But same as last year, now he's getting hot. And then you got all these outfielders. Gerardo Parra gets a once-in-a-while opportunity to play, and he puts up big numbers. It doesn't matter who they play at shortstop. Pat Valencia, Alexi Amarista, they all are hot. You got to ride this thing.
All right, so you got Nolan Arenado tonight against Jeremy Hellickson.
Fly ball pitcher.
You got Arenado. You can get him here. And Charlie Blackman, this guy against the Philadelphia Phillies, 11-20, 7 home runs, 12 RBI in his last 5 games against Philadelphia Philly pitching. And why stop here about you're taking a look at Mark Reynolds as well?
Yeah, Hellickson's got a 7.90 ERA in May. He started out in April on fire with a 1.80 ERA, and he's gone downhill ever since.
All right, so Bryce Harper caught your eye tonight. You're going to spend some money?
Yeah, you know what? If I have any money left over, because I want to pay for Blackman, I want to pay for Cago. If I have any money that I can get there, I'll pay for Bryce Harper against Tyler Chatwood. You know, everybody looks at Chatwood as a guy, oh, he's okay when he's outside of Colorado. But you know what? He's not that great. He's got a 6 ERA.
I'll tell you what, too. If you want a sleeper tonight, you just mentioned it. Like, I like Pittsburgh to win this game tonight as an underdog. You can get the pitcher for real cheap tonight. Tehran could get lit up, and you could get a win out of that for pretty cheap. I wish I had the price, but I don't. All right, so we got to get out of here, Tony. Always a pleasure. We got to get you on a radio show one of these nights.
That's my goal in life, be on your radio show, and then I've made it. Woo!
Oh, yeah. You know how I made it? Jenna Jameson follows me on Twitter now.
Oh, no, that's you. Absolutely have made it. Who spent more time on the back, Jenna Jameson or Jim Plunkett?
Plunkett.
You're right.
She spent a lot of time on her knees. All right, see you, Tony.
Bye now.
She was praying. Just like me, for forgiveness. Game time decision continues. It's time for our plays of the day. We're arriving at that time of the year, people, in which there's only baseball to bet on the board. But that's all right. We've been doing pretty well with baseball so far this year. Let's start off with the only favorite that I'm taking tonight, the Colorado Rockies. I like the Rockies to get it done. Why wouldn't I? They're red hot. Their offense is potent. And they're going to outscore the Philadelphia Phillies this evening. Chatwood's been very good on the road, too. Chatwood's been a dark horse. Good pitcher. All right, I'm taking favorites, but I'm parlaying them. Yankees and Red Sox. I don't see any reasons why the Yankees and the Red Sox both don't get it done this evening at plus 100. Pittsburgh Pirates, man. Julio Teheran has been terrible at the new stadium, man. He's 1-4. His ERA is over 10 in this new stadium. Give me the Pittsburgh Pirates as live dogs, plus 115. Speaking of terrible, Matt Moore's been freaking brutal on the road, man. He's 0-3. His earned run average is over 8. His whip is like a 1.52 or something like that. Give me the Cubbies, minus a run and a half, plus 120. And Mike Leake, man. Mike Leake's been the second best pitcher in the National League after Clayton Kershaw. He's given up 2 runs or less in 7 of his 8 starts. Cardinals live dogs, plus 135. Other night, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.